This episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast is brought to you with NFU Mutual, offering you tailored farming insurance and a local personal service.
Let me just say that we expect to publish the Batters Review before Christmas, the Land Use Framework early next year, the Environmental Improvement Plan we hope to publish this side of Christmas too, and then the Farming Roadmap would be next year as well.
As Defra Secretary Emma Reynolds prepares to give her first major keynote speech to farmers, why is it taking so long for the government to set out its vision for farming? We pay a visit to Agritechnica, Europe's flagship farm machinery exhibition, and hundreds of well-wishers pay their respects to Norfolk farmer and farming commentator David Richardson. Welcome to the Farmers Weekly podcast. I'm Johan Tasker.
I'm Louise Impey.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
All that and more coming up, but straight to our top story as always. Defra Secretary Emma Reynolds is days away from giving her first keynote speech to farmers. The speech will be to the Country, Land and Business Association's annual conference in London on Thursday, November 20th. But what will Emma Reynolds say, and why is it taking the government so long to set out its farming vision? This is what Emma Reynolds told MPs this week.
Let me just say that we expect to publish the Batters Review before Christmas, the Land Use Framework early next year, the Environmental Improvement Plan we hope to publish this side of Christmas too, and then the Farming Roadmap would be next year as well.
Well, joining us now is incoming CLA President Gavin Lane. Gavin, as you heard there, lots in the pipeline, but not much confidence out there right now in farming. What does Emma Reynolds need to be saying at your conference?
Well, I don't think we're going to get anything from her on inheritance tax, just because I think that it's really being the focus is all on the Treasury on that. But I do see that there is a need to try and produce some optimism and hope for the whole of the industry. We just cannot see how at the moment anyone wants to invest in their businesses. And we're getting a lot of our members telling us that, you know, why should I bother carrying on? What is it? What's in it for the future that means that I need to carry on? And I don't think I've seen a situation like this within the industry in the 30 years that I've been in it. It does need a strong sort of show of leadership.
Gavin, it's the first big keynote speech by Defra Secretary Emma Reynolds, which actually will be the first time many of us have heard her speak. What can we hope for?
I think they need to set out where they think Elms is going. I think we've seen, obviously, the halt to the SFI. We haven't got many capital grant schemes open at the moment. There's sort of this feeling that everything's a little bit off track, that there doesn't seem to be a firm sort of direction of travel. And so I think she's got to be really clear about what her priorities are going to be with her tenure within Defra, and how she sees both farming and the wider rural economy developing, and how the schemes are going to help farmers to grow, invest, and for there to be a bit of stability. Because right at the moment, I think everyone is not. There's nothing to go on. There's no, you know, government is not really giving us much information.
Obviously, Emma Reynolds coming to the conference. It's her first sort of keynote, if you will, and we hope to get something out of her. Judging by her select committee performance this week, Gavin, I think she's still got a lot to learn, hasn't she, in terms of her grasp of the brief, and I think around the immediacy of the problems that do need solving or the messages that do need to be given out to get some confidence going.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't agree more. But they've got a really good team behind them. You know, they've got experience within Defra. They've got to use it. They've got to come up to speed quite quickly. but you know they've obviously got Minette's farm profitability review on their table at the moment. There's the land use framework coming through. There's a farming roadmap 2050. There's the food strategy. There's any amount of information there and from these consultations. But somebody's actually got to decide what are the decisions. The decisions have to be made, and someone's got to decide what the direction of travel is from gaining all that information. What are we going to do with it?
And of course, it doesn't help. This is pre-budget, so everyone's not saying anything because they didn't step out of line. And then, of course, what's come to the fore in the last 48 hours or so around leadership really won't help announcements going forward.
Yeah, I see it in the wider context. It's obviously a family farm tax, but it's also a family firm tax. And, the loss to the Treasury that we've reported on, this loss of £2 billion a year eventually for a gain of £500 million a year in tax take, seems, incredulous that would be a way to support growth and investment in our sector. The £500 million that they're talking about gaining from the IHT changes is 0.18% of the whole of the annual welfare bill of this country. It's a tiny amount of money that is causing so many businesses, not just farming businesses, but so many family-run businesses, to think again about growth and investment. And actually, is it worth carrying on? And that is that is incredibly destructive, really destructive.
Emma Reynolds, sticking to the line, Gavin, that inheritance tax on farmers is going ahead. What's your reaction to that?
We're equipping our members with as much information and support as we can for them to try and mitigate the worst effects of these changes. But I spoke to a member the other day, and he's an 800 acre farmer, and he has spent £30,000 already on advice to try and work out the best way of getting through the changes to IHT. He's got a father in his 80s. He's worried sick about what it could do to his business. And at the moment, the sort of restructuring of his business is going to be expensive. It's going to be risky. It's going to be complex, which is why they've spent so much money. And it's all money that could be invested in his business and to grow and to have the benefits to the wider economy. It just seems a completely counterintuitive.
That sort of example is, I think, behind why many believe that this government doesn't really understand farming and the rural economy. Do you think that they're even willing to try and improve that understanding?
Well, if they don't, if they're not willing and interested in farming, they should be willing and interested in family businesses more widely. There are 5.2 million family-owned businesses in this country, and this tax change and from a business property relief position is going to cause untold damage to our country's economy. So I'm obviously focused on family farms, but in the wider context, this is going to have much wider repercussions. We're being told the whole time that rural family-owned businesses are thinking of selling up and moving away, perhaps moving out of the country. That's all lost revenue, and those businesses will be sold to, presumably, to conglomerates. We've talked a lot about this. And where is the tax revenue going to go then? It's a very short term position of getting tax in for what is effectively very, very long term damage.
So, Gavin, aside all of the current lack of reports coming to publication, loads of stuff sat on DEFRA's shelf, IHT, all of the perils that lay in front of the rural economy and rural operators, where are we to with the CLA's Rural Powerhouse campaign? Because obviously that's been running for many years. It's identified huge opportunities that we all know, those of us that live and work in the rural context. If we bring that bang up to date, are you guys just still left there banging the drum and no one's really moved forward, or are bits happening?
Well, we feel that we're getting somewhere with planning reform. I mean, obviously, if the government wants to build this huge number of houses, they've got to, you know, they can't always be built in towns and cities. You know, they've got to look elsewhere. We still believe that the answer is small developments over a large number of villages rather than very large developments that seem to be so controversial. So I do see that there's a glimmer of hope in planning reform, but I think it could go much wider. And we've talked endlessly about permitted development rights for reservoirs. I mean, I think that there is going to be a huge water crisis in this country next year. And that's not just for farming. That will be more widely felt. So there are massive opportunities for the government to engage with the rural economy to actually solve some of these problems, which was the whole point of the Rural Powerhouse campaign. So, yeah, we've seen glimmers of hope, but there's so much more that they could do. And that's the frustration, you know, that we don't want to be talking about IHT. We want to be talking about the opportunities that are out there and the long-term development of the rural economy for the betterment of the country.
It seems to me that good landlord-tenant relationships are going to be more important than ever. How do you see that going forward, especially given the uncertainty that we've got in the industry at the moment? Do we need to do things differently?
Well, I we fully endorse the role that of the Farm Tenancy Commissioner, Alan Laidlow's new position. I think that's going to be really good news for trying to solve some of the problems. I mean, none of what I've talked about in terms of rural growth and investment is going to happen unless we get much better collaboration between landlord and tenant. And we know that. I think trying to foster those really good relationships, showing examples of where great relationships exist, and leading the way on that is going to be really, really important. And that's not just for food production, but things like natural capital and nature delivery at scale is all going to have to happen with better landlord-tenant collaboration.
So, Gavin, apart from a U-turn on inheritance tax, what would you like to see in this month's budget?
Well, I mentioned permitted development rights. I do think that, you know, we've seen Class R and Class Q brought in to help change around redundant farm buildings and hopefully you put those into really good use. I do think there's an awful lot more they could do. And I definitely think the point about reservoirs, an introduction of a better capital grant scheme, maybe a more extensive capital grant scheme would be great. Maybe look at capital allowances again. I know that they're not particularly keen on that, but anything that can just kickstart more growth and development into the rural economy is going to be good news for us. I mean, obviously, I would love them to reconsider the changes to IHT. But they seem hell bent on, you know, the self-inflicted damage that's going to cause. Apart from that, yes, I'd like to see a better look at permitted development rights and capital allowances.
That's incoming CLA President Gavin Lane looking forward, if that's the right phrase, to Emma Reynolds' speech as DEFRA Secretary to the Country Land and Business Association Annual Conference.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And now a special word with this week's podcast partner, NFU Mutual. And we're joined by NFU Mutual's Emma Coleman. So you're financial advisors. You're not just selling products, you're actually working with farmers.
Correct, we do, yes. So for us, it's all about trust and relationships. And we understand that a good relationship develops over time. So this means getting to know you, getting to know your family, getting to know your business, absolutely essential. It's really important, though, that you regularly review what you want to achieve through the financial plan that you've decided upon. And if changes are needed, then our advisors are there to review those with you to make sure that the advice that you've received remains appropriate. That helps ensure that your plans are the best that they can be and do keep pace with any changes that you have that's in your life. So our financial advisors are there not only to share the NFU Mutual's knowledge answer your questions and bring clarity and focus to your financial goals, I always like to think about it as making the complicated uncomplicated by learning about your circumstances and financial aspirations. Our financial advisors can help you create the right financial plan for your needs, and that's the important thing. It's for you and your needs. Our customers feel assured to know that there's a professional available that can help them when they need us.
Last year's budget, a big shock to the industry. Plenty of farmers now thinking about succession, about their handover plans to the next generation. How are your financial advisors? How are you helping with that?
It is really prevalent at the moment, and the majority of conversations that we're having. And yes, we can help you with your farm handover personal plan that you need. So by finding out about your unique personal circumstances, your family situation, your family aspiration, as well as answering all of the questions that you may have, we can help create the right financial plan for you and your family. Your farm handover plan will almost certainly mean checking that you have the right pension, investments, and most importantly, protection arrangements that are in place. There's a really wide range of investment options that can be used as part of your family's succession plan. And our philosophy is simple. We listen to you, what you want, and then we use our expertise to recommend what you need. We get to know you. We listen to your objectives in terms of handing down the farm, what's important to you and your personal financial goals, and then recommend a tailored financial plan that's just right for you to help you achieve what you want for your family and any successes that you want within the business.
Please remember, the value of investments can rise and fall, and you may get back less than you invested.
That's going to be really reassuring, I know, to Farmers Weekly podcast listeners. So if somebody wants to get in touch with an NFU mutual financial advisor, how do they do that?
Really, really easy. We have a free phone telephone number, which anybody can call us through on, and that's on 0800 622 323. Or alternatively, any customer can pop into their local NFU Mutual agency office. Our NFU Mutual financial advisors
can advise you on a wide range of NFU Mutual products and others we offer from specialist providers. They'll take the time to explain the services we offer and the charges, so everything is clear from the start.
Emma Coleman from NFU Mutual, this week's podcast partner, thank you very much.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
Now, Europe's flagship farm machinery extravaganza has been taking place this week. Agritechnica in Hanover in Germany, attracting thousands upon thousands of visitors, including many from the UK. Louise caught up with one of them, William Womwell, Velcourt Farm Manager at the Duplin Estate in Perthshire.
A lot of window shopping. I think everybody goes there with a shopping list, but yeah, we did a lot of window shopping. We were there as guests of a manufacturer, so it was good to have a look around and see what other people across the Europe and across the world are doing with equipment.
And some huge bits of kit there, I think. But what impressed you the most?
Massive bits of kit. Yeah, it was very interesting to see what other manufacturers we don't have in the UK and machinery types and stuff like that we don't have. That was interesting. I think from a flat out sort of impressed me was the Nexat system with the combine that you can put a drill unit on it. You can do all of this. That was quite amazing to see just how big that was. Proper prairie scale farming. And I think some of the drones, just the sheer size of the drones, whilst I don't think we're going to be doing too much spraying or cover crop application with them, I think for sort of spot spraying in hard to reach areas, I think they're quite good. But they were very impressive. And autonomous little tractors, they're all going to end up driving themselves. So you'll have one man go to the field with one or two tractors, and he'll drive all three from his truck or whatever. I think that's quite impressive.
That's Will Womwell talking to Louise. And while Louise was talking to Will, I caught up with Ed Mowbray, marketing expert for ABC Communications, which represents a number of agricultural machinery manufacturers, while he was at Agritechnica.
It's heaving, Johan, as normal. It's the biennial show. Everyone seems to save their things up for it, their launches up for it. The stand space here is just on another level. It really is. 27 halls. There's live demos. There's mowers going up and down, unfolding, folding up. It really is something that you have to see to believe, really. The investment in this show, this sort of iteration edition of Agritechnica, does feel bigger than ever. The German brands, they've just, you know, they've got, you know, almost dedicated halls to themselves in some respects. One brand I spoke to had over 100 employees working on that stand just that day. So it sort of gives you an idea of how big the show is and how seriously these brands take it.
Ed, farming in the UK at the moment, some big challenges. More broadly, though, farming in Europe, challenges there too? Or is the atmosphere at Agritechnica, is it more buoyant?
Yeah, it seems very buoyant. Yeah, I mean, it's a testament to looking around the show and seeing what's there. And I think one of the products that's caught the eye of many people is a Chinese all-electric combine that's got 14 electric motors. Can churn out 600 horsepower on boost, you know, and it's bright green. So that really has sort of drawn people along, and that's where Agritechnica is different to, to a Lama show or something like that. You get that sort of global feel of what is going on in the market. And I think looking more broadly at, you know, how the general mood is, I think this year someone said to me that if it's got an engine, it's probably struggling to sell, but actually, if it doesn't have an engine, they may be shifting a few units, you know, and it's things are ticking along. So I think that's, you know, that's a fair reflection, you know, on probably where the market is at the moment.
So there is business being done then, Ed. It's not just people kicking tires or having a look-see.
No, I don't think it's just kicking tires, although, you know, I would sort of caveat that with, you know, things certainly aren't where they were 5 years ago. But I think, you know, there are people genuinely looking to, you know, at upgrading. They're looking maybe longer term, keeping things for another couple of years. And then what's going to happen in a couple of years time when they actually do need to upgrade? What's on the market? You know, where are they justifying their spend? And I think that's where Agritechnica is really good. Saw lots of UK and Irish farmers there, probably more than we've ever seen before, really.
And some UK farms, Ed, I've seen on social media, PX Farms and Park Farm Thorney, taking the whole team out to Agritechnica.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so Park Farm Thorney were actually on my flight on the way out, and I think there were sort of, you know, certainly over 10 of them there, all in the same gilets and everything going out there. And, you know, we were chatting about it with a couple of journalists over dinner, actually, you know, one night, and we were sort of saying where is the sort of justification for doing that? And actually, it's a great team bonding thing more than anything. But it's actually looking, you know, when you take everyone out to a show like that, and maybe you're looking to buy a new cultivator or a new tractor, maybe you're looking to change a brand or something like that, I don't know. But actually, when you get everyone there at the show, you can easily compare between different brands and different, you know, the sort of USPs, I suppose, of each, you know, cultivator, or, you know, different points they can use, or how they, you know, how they move the soil. And actually then you're kind of getting that familiarity, and you're almost justifying it and evaluating them at the show, so that then maybe in the spring or the summer, when you do get a demo out, that some of that groundwork's been done. And, you know, the operators are probably more than happy to actually give it a go, because they've got that familiarity. They remember seeing it at the show. And they can sort of justify it, or they've already justified it in their own mind. So then, you know, they're more than happy to go up and down the field with it. So I think it is, you know, it's a great thing to do. Certainly from a team bond, it gets everyone away from the farm for a bit as well, which is really nice. They can go and have a couple of beers in the evening. It's a busy time, isn't it, on a farm? So actually a little bit of time away, as we all know, is really good.
Ed Mowbray from ABC Communications, thank you for talking to us here on the Farmers Weekly podcast. Hugh, Louise, Ed Mowbray there, before him, Will Womwell. Some people having a look-see, other people doing business at Agritechnica there in Hanover.
Yeah, I haven't been, and I was trying to potentially get there this week, but it hasn't happened. But I looked at some of the content on the old social media, and it's epically huge, isn't it? And at a time when so many arable businesses, not just in the UK, in America, in Europe, all over the world, are really struggling. And let's face it, they buy lots of this kit. And farming, you know, it's always tricky. Just amazing, the investment that's gone in. When you look at just the investment that goes into that show, it looks amazing. And credit to the manufacturers, and, you know, some of the manufacturers coming along saying, we've got, you know, 60 new things to launch, and you think, my God, that's just, yeah, amazing that despite all that's going on and all of the bad stuff that's happening in farming, it's a bit like when we were at Lammer at the beginning of this year, and there was a bit of a, you know, everyone was, oh, it could be a bit doom and gloom. But it was, again, absolutely testament to these companies. They're just utter resilience, and they just keep pushing forward and keep pushing stuff out there. And some farmers obviously keep buying it. But in the current climate, that's a really brave move. And what a time in terms of the transition of technologies as we see more robotics and all of the really high-tech stuff coming out, which isn't cheap to develop. And yet they're still pushing that out the door as well. It's absolutely amazing.
Louise, Ed Mowbray saying that, some UK farmers taking the whole team out there to see what's happening and get some buy-in in the event that they do bring a new machine onto farm, that the team are a little bit familiar with it and willing to give it a go.
Yeah, I mean, and what a nice thing to do, actually, to your team, to take them to an event like that and just give them a couple of days off the farm, and then they can really get up to speed with all the technology that's coming their way, hopefully, and all those digital tools. You know, it's interesting, isn't it, that there's obviously still quite a lot of investment going into this world. So we might be having a bit of a blip on that in England at the moment, but obviously in other parts of the world, they're not. So it sounds as though they've all had great trips. They've been up for the travel, a very successful event by all accounts. So, wow. I mean, I was very interested in Ed's comment about if it's got an engine, it's not selling, because yesterday I took delivery of my first ever electric vehicle. So I've taken the plunge, very brave, and now trying to come to terms with how you run a car through an app and all that sort of thing. But happy days, and let's hope that that show continues to go just from strength to strength.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And now a special message from this week's podcast partner, KWS. KWS are leading the way with a new generation of maize, from ultra earlies to later maturing varieties. With expanded testing of more varieties across more sites than ever, KWS has received exceptional recognition on the 2026 NIAB descriptive list, with varieties that offer greater yields, enhanced disease resistance, and proven performance. KWS Zemo and KWS Rio are just two of the exciting names to look out for, offering tremendous scope to raise the bar on yield and quality while showing adaptability to a changing climate. To see the full KWS maize portfolio, visit kws.com.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
You're listening to the Farmers Weekly Podcast. Welcome along wherever you're listening to us from. You can email us podcast@fwi.co.uk. And if you're in the UK itself, you can also message us by texting the word farm, followed by your message to 88440. Hugh, lead story in Farmers Weekly this week. Arable farmers face another hammer blow as Labour's Brexit reset threatens to wipe out half their herbicide options overnight.
Yeah, there's some potential hurdles here. Certainly some challenges in terms of approved products and products that we've approved here in the UK, which haven't yet been approved in Europe. You would think if you're going to take a product, if you're Basf or Syngenta or whoever, and you're taking a product to the global market, then you're taking it with a view to eventually getting it approved in Europe, because it's such a huge market. But it is, and also look, there's potentially some goings on here on the animal health side as well. But it is I suppose it's a harsh reality, isn't it, of dynamic alignment. Love it or hate it, you can either be dynamically aligned and sort of be subject, I suppose, to the same regulation, or just constantly not be dynamically aligned and constantly play catch up. And at the end of the day, as we've said time and time again, they are our biggest customer for our agri-food exports by a country mile. So unless we're going to have a sudden direct line to Singapore or Hong Kong or wherever, we've sort of got to suck it up, really. So it's going to be interesting. Some would say the quicker we get dynamically aligned and get back in, the better, because it's a quick way to get growth. Others would obviously be very upset with that viewpoint, and think it's the worst thing ever, and that Brexit was the best thing since sliced bread, and it hasn't cost the country or the economy a penny at all. So yeah, it's going to be a reoccurring theme, I think, going forward for this government.
Louise, you're not too sure that this is actually going to happen, are you?
Well, I don't know. I'm not quite sure what decisions are going to be made about this alignment with the EU. But I think in the article, it does particularly single out blackgrass control. And I would say that, you know, we have known about flufenacet likely to disappear. We've known about that for a while. And there are quite a lot of trials going on and quite a lot of work to find ways of replacing flufenacet. And also, let's remember that there is some resistance out there to that active ingredient now. So, yeah, it doesn't have to be a disaster. There has been work going on. Slightly more concerning was the discovery that the synmethylene product, active ingredient, so that's the active that's in the Luximo products that are used for blackgrass control. I was a bit more concerned to find that that hasn't got approval in the EU, because that's had a very successful introduction into this country and it's working very well for farmers. But otherwise, you know, I think... Yeah, we do have this constant churn, actually, of active ingredients, and we do learn how to live without some of them. It's always a shame when we lose useful things before their time is up. So we'll have to watch and see what goes on with that.
Louise, also in the news this week, news that Nottingham University is suspending its agriculture courses.
Yeah, that has come out this week, and obviously some people are very upset and bothered about that. It's a shame, isn't it? I don't know how long that course has been running there, but I think really for a very long time. But of course, the universities, they're all struggling financially at the moment. And, you know, the university itself says that they have got falling numbers on that course. You know, they're just not attracting the people that they need to keep it going. I think the other thing, which is probably relevant just to Nottingham University, is that agriculture is on a separate campus, isn't it? It's at Sutton Bonington. And of course, the university then has its main campus in the city of Nottingham. So they're probably looking at, you know, quite a cost saving from that. But yeah, we'll have to see. I think the writing's on the wall for that course there. And as I said, some people will be really bothered by that.
There has been a petition set up, Hugh, attracting quite a number of signatures.
Yeah, look, I can understand why. And look, it would break my heart. I went to Harper Adams. If Harper Adams stopped doing agricultural courses, and I get that alumni, former alumni of that institution would be very upset by it. I get that, okay? But equally, when the demand profile isn't perhaps where they want it to be, and the cost of running universities is so huge, some would argue they've made it huge by inflating all their salaries over the last 25, 30 years. But when farmers coming out demanding that this is a terrible thing and it needs to stop now, and you think like saying, well, will you go and run the course then? You know, it's just like, it is just what happens. It's the evolution, I'm afraid. So it's a sad thing. But I suppose, look, it's what they've got to do if they're going to survive. They're not going to keep it open. And at the end of the day, if someone else wants to come in and run more agricultural courses in other places, then you know, they're entirely open to do that. And other courses are doing quite well. You know, the intake at most of the other sites are pretty good. The whole sort of interest in farming careers, I think we mustn't forget that whenever you speak to anyone in any of the colleges, the interest in farming careers, certainly what I notice on the ground here with young people coming from non-farming backgrounds, always asking about work experience more than ever before. And that's thanks to all the media exposure of agriculture and the fact that people look at it and you know, the industry's done a pretty good job at promoting itself to non-farmers and farmers alike as a career choice for the future. So despite the doom and gloom, there is some bright stuff, and it's probably not as easy as everyone thinks running university in 2025.
Change too, Louise, at the Agriculture and Horticulture Development Board. A new chief executive and accounting officer due to take her post on the 5th of January, so not very far away at all. Helen Herniman, a chartered accountant with several years' experience leading organisations in sectors such as law, nursing and midwifery. Not from a farming background, does it matter?
I'm sure it doesn't matter. I think actually it was Hugh that used the term untainted by agriculture. So there you go. She brings a lot of other skills, doesn't she, with her? And this sort of strategic insight that she has is obviously going to be very, very useful and relevant to her new role at the AHDB. I'm sure she'll be a quick learner. There's an awful lot that people want to tell her about farming and agriculture. So she's going to, as you say, be in post in January and, you know, a fresh start. And let's see how that goes.
Hugh, your thoughts on new AHDB Chief Executive Helen Herniman?
Well, welcome, Helen, to the wacky world of farming. No, I think it's great. Look, it's she's obviously been selected because she's good at bean counting and she's an accountant and she knows what the numbers should look like or should get to. Coming at it from a non-farming perspective, actually, it's probably not a bad thing because she can look at it really objectively. It will mean, though, that the farmer types within that organisation, the people on the boards, the chair and people like that, will obviously have to do their utmost to help her along the way in terms of relating or farmer-proofing everything. I think it's a, you know, I think if we'd had a, you know, a farm person or someone that had been in the farm mill forever in senior leadership roles come into it, you might have sort of gone, oh, no, another one. So, no, I think it's, let's see how she gets on and welcome along. And we can't wait to have you on the podcast, Helen. You can tell us what you're going to do to make AHDB amazing.
A new chief executive at the AHDB, then, keeping on top of the numbers. Hugh, this week's markets in association with the AHDB, what are the numbers doing there?
Thank you very much, Johan. Finished their dead weight this week. Goes up another 3p, 658.5. That's tanking on. Compare that to a year ago, 519.7. Significantly higher. Finished their live weight, 371.4. That's up 3p on the week. To the sheep rings, 674.9 is the deadweight SQQ this week. That's gone up around about 12p on the week. The live weight, 321.3, that's also up. That's up about 6 or nearly 7 pence, or 6p exactly, actually. That's up 6p on the week. And again, that is significantly higher than a year ago. The pig price has gone up 0.1 of a penny. It's 201.9, but it's still lower than where it was. On to the arable markets. And once again, there's little cheer to be had, I'm afraid. Not what you want to hear if you've just been to Agritechnica with ideas of new kit. Feed wheat, 165.8. That's actually gone back just under a pound. Milling wheat's 180 dead. That's actually gone up all of about 30p. You're 30p better off this week than last week per ton if you're selling on the spot. Feed barley is 145.40. That stands on exactly all. Seed rate 407.9. That's gone back 2 pounds. Feed peas 203. Stands on from last week. Feed beans almost the same, back 10p a ton, 204.20. Diesel, why is diesel getting expensive when global oil prices are going down? We are up another 3p this week, 73.07 pence on the Wednesday morning diesel ring round for tractors, up from 70.7p last week. A year ago, you could buy a litre of diesel, red diesel, for 68p. That's no good, is it?
Thank you, Hugh. And for trusted market data delivered straight to your inbox, visit the AHDB Preference Centre at ahdb.org.uk/market-data to sign up for and customise AHDB market emails.
The Farmers Weekly Podcast. The Farmers Weekly Podcast.
And finally, more than 500 people gathered to celebrate the life of Norfolk farmer, broadcaster and Farmers Weekly columnist David Richardson, who died aged 87 in August. From near and far they came to attend the memorial service at the Royal Norfolk Showground on Friday, November the 14th. David was a colossus of agricultural journalism for almost 60 years, but he was first and foremost a forward-thinking farmer. I caught up with Reverend Gordon Gatwood, who led the service of Thanksgiving, but first, former NFU President Baroness Minette Batters, who paid a personal tribute.
Thank you. has had a little quip, and it was usually, you know, go get them, girl, and really supportive right from the beginning at a time when not everybody was. A few people worried at a woman picking up the helm at the NFU. And David and Lord Plum, as the sort of old guard, if you like, were so supportive to me. They never challenged me in public. They had wise words of advice, and they were always there. And, you know, you don't get many people like that. And Lord Plum and David Richardson were two very, very special people for farming.
Gordon, you led the service today. That must have been a real honour.
It was a wonderful privilege, especially when I found I'd spoken to David just a couple of days before he died. And I then learned that he'd said to Andrew, his son, one of his last things was, I want Gordon to lead the memorial service. So it's made it very, very special indeed.
And you've some fond memories of David.
Oh, I have some fantastic memories. I dread to think how many years I've known him. Certainly it's going back about 30 years. But it's always been one. He and Henry Plum, I always saw the same. They were both good friends that you could confide in, talk to, and they were both real mentors. And what I particularly loved about David was his sense of humour. And I had some very good nights sitting there in the Farmers Club talking together.
Lots and lots of stories.
Oh, lots of stories. And he was a great storyteller. People know him for his written word, but spoken word, he knew how to get a punchline across.
And one of David Richardson's lasting legacies is the linking environment and farming charity he helped to establish, Leaf Chairman Philip Wynne.
I mean, he was inspirational, really, because he knew that farming had to change. And through his leadership, and let's face it, a lot of people didn't necessarily agree with David in the early years, but he's been absolutely right. And what we see now is an organisation that has flourished because of his insight and his input over so many years. And he worked so closely with Caroline. They were inseparable at times. They talked every day. And they created a credibility that is quite phenomenal, really. And to a certain extent, you know, where we are today is simply the result of all those early years in the 90s, setting up demonstration farms, creating innovation centres, and now, you know, we're in a place or time in agriculture when all this has come right, and so Leaf is flourishing on all their fantastic work in those early years.
Encouraging farmers to do more for the environment, and now we look at farming and the environment as being very much working hand in hand.
I've always said that commercial farming can work hand in hand with care for the environment. That is just sensible farming. And I think, you know, now, I think we understand even more that utilising the resources respectfully should be our core aim. People talk about regenerative farming today. We've been practising integrated farm management since 1993. So it's just a very sensible, care for the environment, and also proper and careful, thoughtful utilisation of resources, whatever that might be, around the farming business.
As Leaf Chairman Philip Wynne and David's son Andrew described his father as a fair man and often more sensitive than he sometimes appeared on TV.
I'd also say he formed a lot of my opinions as well, not just those of the farming industry.
And what kind of man will you remember him as being?
Fair, funny, loving, sensitive. I mean, he didn't come across as sensitive necessarily on television, although I think he was sensitive to an awful lot of the stories that he always got himself involved in. But all of those words, they're probably the first few words that occur to me. I think I could have gone through the dictionary and probably found a word about every third page that would have applied to him one way or the other. But as I said earlier, we've only got the room for the afternoon.
A tremendous turnout here. There must be, 500 or 600 people. The great and good of UK agriculture, but also a strong local representation here as well from across Norfolk.
We're thrilled to bits. We're thrilled. Not only with everybody who has come today, and we've had response of people coming, I think there's a few people who've come as far as 400 miles today, but the wishes and condolences and letters and an awful lot of recollections and reminiscences and what have you that have come into us in cards and letters and what have you in the last month or so since Dad died. Just overwhelming.
That's Andrew Richardson paying tribute to his father, Norfolk farmer and broadcaster David Richardson, at his memorial service at the Norfolk Showground. And that is it for this episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast. We do hope you've enjoyed what you've heard. If you have, please subscribe to us wherever you get your podcasts. And if you've really enjoyed what you've heard, please do leave us a 5-star review. We'll be back next week with all the latest news, views and analysis of all the big stories affecting UK agriculture. But now, as always, until next week, I'm Johan Tasker.
I'm Louise Impey.
And I'm Hugh Broome.
Thank you for listening. This episode of the Farmers Weekly podcast was brought to you with NFU Mutual, offering you tailored farming insurance and a local personal service.